Hello, podcast listeners, and welcome to the Adventure Slang Podcast, the podcast where we speak adventure. And with me today, as usual, is Aaron. Hi, Aaron.
Hello. How are you doing?
Good. It's morning, and morning is one of those times that comes really early.
Absolutely. It absolutely is. I think it comes early every time, and it's never late enough.
Oh, that's ridiculous. Here we are. We're a week behind on this month, but that's because we've been doing cool stuff with Adventure Slang and New Avarden Development, and being out and about in the world, checking out a recent convention.
Yes, definitely. Yeah. As far as what we've been doing, besides out and about, we've been making some coming into the fine points, I think, in the New Avarden development, which is very exciting because when we're in the fine points, that means we've established the foundation. And even on top of that, we've established framework and structure, and it's exciting. So yeah, we went to RageCon in Reno, Nevada for our first convention as a company.
Yay. That was, yeah. So for those who don't know, RageCon is a small convention by comparison to a lot of conventions, but I don't honestly know how many people were there. I would probably guesstimate somewhere around 500, maybe. Okay. I think. Yeah. But it was very busy, had stuff going on all day long, and it was nice and mm-hmm. Centrally located. It was easy to get to. It was in Sparks, Nevada, actually, not downtown, at the Nugget. And that was a cool place to be able to go. There's a lot of little things to do around there, and the convention was the main one. How did it go for you?
I had a great time. My wife and I, Brittany, we've mentioned her a few times. She and I were able to try out plenty of new games, some new board games. We talked to a number of different faces in the industry, which was pretty exciting. We were able to even sit down and play some games with new people. And yeah, we had a great time.
Nice. Yeah. So we had our setup was you and I alternated tables. So mm-hmm. I had an early one on Saturday. You had the afternoon. I had the night. And then you had Sunday morning. So we had four opportunities just to run New Avarden. And then time throughout the day to do other things. I was in a Call of Cthulhu game on Friday, and I too got to visit with a number of people in the industry, and it's always nice to consider the different things that are going on in the industry, the different components that make up the gaming community, and we talk about it industry-wise as a business and things like that, but it's part of the culture too, and everybody's in it because mm-hmm. of their love for this stuff, right?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah,
absolutely. A lot of people I spoke to, they primarily developed board games, which is a little bit tangential to role-playing games, but the line is so thin, and you can really see it because, like you said, it's really the passion that drives the industry in a business sense, but that's what makes it really a community because we're all people who love the same things and we all come sit down together to share what we love so much. And it's really wonderful.
Yeah. Everybody's loves to talk about it. They're interested in what we have to say. We're interested in what they have mm-hmm. to say. 3D printers and game designers and stores, not stores necessarily, but distribution. And even that, you know, mm-hmm. distributor, you'd think something as simple as like storing materials, shipping and things like that, that sounds like, you know, telephone books or something like that. But everybody's just loves to be surrounded by those colorful covers and those interesting potentials in those systems and the bits and pieces like the dice and the minis and all that kind of stuff. It's,
oh yeah.
I know we're preaching to the choir here, but it's exciting to be around it all the time. Always exciting. Yes. So one of the things that was so rewarding for me, and I think you had a similar experience from what I got in feedback from you and from the players that were at your table, folks were excited to see something new. And with New Avarden, they got something new. And it didn't, I mean, I had no issues with it being confusing or hard to understand for the players or bogging down. I had all our pre-gens out. You know, we had 8 different options on the table. And it only took the players like 2 minutes to decide what they were going to go for.
Mm-hmm. I was just going to say it's cool to see our game. I guess what I should say is cool to see the players and that community where we're talking about connect to what we've been developing. And it kind of, I'll speak for myself and just that it really reinvigorates, you know, what we're doing with this, like why, you know, the passion we have behind this.
Right. And something that we've seen other developers over the years, you know, the things that they did. It's funny to look at it from this perspective now and see how our excitement for that new product was driven by somebody else's imagination and ideas for what's exciting to them. And now we're on the other side of creating those things for that same purpose.
Yes, absolutely.
And that brings to mind the element of experience. Experience the story, experience the community, the camaraderie, the connections. And in fact, I know that we've got people that we met at the convention who are now networking through us to find players for their home game and things like that. And that's where we started. And that's the kind of spirit that we really want to keep developing, right? That's what it's all about.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Definitely a major part, I think, of the whole thing is, I mean, like we talked about, even the distribution being like seeming like such a mundane part of the whole process. But really, you know, sharing the love that we have is what it's about in a major way.
Yeah, that brings to mind, again, that element of experience and our guest for today. We have Dennis Nickel from the D&D Experience. He's going to talk to us about what that is and how that offers new opportunities for people to not only experience the game, but to be introduced to it and learn what tabletop role-playing games are all about. Shall we talk to Dennis?
Yes. Yes, let's.
All right. We are pleased today to welcome Dennis Nickel, Dungeon Master, Game Master, RPGer, and proprietor of the D&D Experience. We're going to learn about that. Dennis, welcome to the show.
Hey, thank you for having me on. This is it's really great to be here.
Yeah, we're excited to hear about the D&D Experience, which we're going to hear about in a little while. But we always like to get in with our guests to gaming history, background, pretty common stuff. But it's all about story. TTRPGs are about the story, and we like to hear the stories of our guests. So if you don't mind, tell us a little bit about who got you into TTRPGs or how you got into the RPG experience.
Sure. In short form, I mean, who got me into it was a guy that was, you know, in my early teenage years. His name was Mohawk Mike.
Nice.
That wasn't his actual legal name. I just don't know and can't remember what his last name was. But he had this awesome mohawk. And, and he got me involved in AD&D 2nd Edition, which was kind of my first actual bona fide tabletop RPG. That's the short answer. The long answer is a little bit more involved than that because of what my interests were and how it led into running into this Mike character. And... you know, my, like what I was interested in growing up into my mid-teenage years. So it, like probably about a 6-year journey is what I'd say. And I'll try and be brief, but it's kind of like a series of like gateway drugs that led me from one thing into another. It started when I first got my NES when I was a kid. And just, you know, a lot of my friends liked sports games and, you know, action adventure games. And I mean, I did too a little bit, but like Legend of Zelda, like those are the kinds of titles that, and like Castlevania, that had that medieval style and that fantasy, you know, that RPG style to them, like really kind of grasped me as a kid. And then right around the same time, I don't know if anyone's familiar with these, they're called Choose Your Own Adventure books.
Oh yeah.
Oh yeah.
Right. So that's where it began. That was the beginning. And then, you know, after a couple of years, you know, you get older and new stuff comes out and, graduated, I guess, from Choose Your Own Adventure to, it was called the adventure series Lone Wolf. I think it's called Lone Wolf. What was the author's name? I think it was Joe Denver or Joe Dever.
These novels?
It's a series of novels, but okay. it's which was like choose your own adventure, but you were playing a like this ranger character, and he had a character sheet in the back. So as you read through the novel and things happened to you, he would take damage or get treasure and do other things like that. But the DM was like, it was a choose your own adventure style written novel book.
Right.
Nice.
You know, and then, you know, also similarly, right, there was NES titles, but then Commodore 64 and lots of really cool, sophisticated, like, you know, RPG style games of, you know, varying titles. I don't remember all of the names of them because there was like a bunch of them. They were all bootleg and stuff when I was a kid. But then a couple of years later, you know, probably when I was hitting 12, my mother joined the Society for Creative Anachronism, known as the SCA. It's kind of like it's a medieval reenactment society. Yeah. You know, it was like Civil War reenactors and stuff. Well, these are people that did medieval interests where
like Renfair kind of.
Yeah. But a lot more historically accurate, I guess. Ah. But mm-hmm. it's basically the same thing. But the thing is, you know, playing Link on NES or playing a pre-established character like that Ranger character in the Lone Wolf series, the SCA was my first introduction to really creating my own character, because in the SCA, you create a persona of some medieval style person that you're looking to emulate from whatever period of history within the Middle Ages up until the Renaissance or something or whatever. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, right around then is when I really started to see and experience in-depth storytelling and choice making in RPGs like Final Fantasy II on Super Nintendo or SNES, which is known as Final Fantasy IV outside the US. Or Legend of Zelda, Link to the Past, like Secret of Mana, you know, games like that. Now, that's what really got me to this early to mid-teenage period. And at right at the same time, I moved to a new town. And so was forced to make new friends, you know, awkward and everything. But all of those interests, you know, of course, connected me with others that had similar. And one was, well, he was a freshman in high school. This is when I was in eighth grade. Ooh. And that was this Mohawk Mike guy. You know, he had, like I said, he had an awesome Mohawk. He was your classic kind of like punk rock kind of fella. And it was he, along with my buddy Zach, who first introduced me to what a real D&D or tabletop RPG was. And that's like I said earlier, AD&D Second Edition, which if you think about it, right, it's, for me, it was the best elements of all of those other prior experiences wrapped up in one thing. I remember my first adventure, my first character very vividly, and it blew my mind. I mean, obviously, and you know, the hobby has enraptured me ever since. So that's the long form story. If your name is Mike and you grew up in SeaTac, Washington, and you had a Mohawk and played D&D and BattleTech and MechWarrior, and I think we played Rifts and a few other titles, in the mid 90s. I'm kind of dating myself, but if you're listening, look me up, man, because you changed my life.
Nice. That's awesome. A great story. Yeah, I love the Mohawk aspect. Yeah.
Well, you know, yeah, I was going to say, actually, I had an awesome Mohawk when I was a teen, so that spoke to me.
Yeah.
Well, it probably spoke to others that were slightly younger than you as well.
Good to know.
Makes an impact.
I was also wanting to say that you also unlocked a core memory for me that I kind of forgot about in my own history with role-playing games and stuff. And there was actually a period of my time when I was, I don't know, somewhere in the 8 to 10 general range. I really have no idea, but I was really into choose your own adventure books as well. And I remember vividly one book being about like you played a barbarian exploring this cave with other adventurers. And I think I had the whole character sheet, and I remember like erasing a hole through that sheet, exploring every ending to that book. Yeah. And
awesome.
It was great. Yeah, definitely. Until I get that whole experience.
This one's the little brown pages with the wood fiber in them.
Yeah, exactly.
Hold up too much erasing.
No, it really didn't. It was disappointing, but I did get to every ending. So I guess it served its purpose.
Awesome.
So Dennis, you came in through the video game and reading kind of avenue, it sounds like, before the games. And I don't think that that's necessarily unusual. Like, I got into it through reading because I started when video games were not quite yet a thing. But so can you speak a little bit to, can you identify the elements of role-playing games that stood out to you as the final stage of that sort of trek of entertainment? You know, not to say that maybe you stopped playing video games, but what is it about the role-playing games that's so different to you?
The non-static nature of your choices. Like when you read a book, even in Choose Your Own Adventure books, there and, you know, like the command line RPG games that I played on Commodore 64 and stuff, there's a static set of options. And eventually you exhaust them all, right? Eventually you get to the end of the Barbarian Choose Your Own Adventure book or the Lone Wolf book or whatever it is, and it's somewhat static. The thing that really nailed me, like, again, during that first adventure was, I think I made a choice to change my character's alignment, which, like, that was not pre-written. And the fact that my decisions and how we explored the story that we explored and the little, you know, goofy environment that we were in, like, my level of impact in that and the creation of that is what really sent it home for me. And that's what put it over the top compared to all the other experiences that I'd had. And the ability to then imagine and craft and create. And, you know, I got a player's handbook to do this. And then afterwards, awesome, went and got DMG and all of these tools to be able to create those things myself or to help others do that. And to see that experience when I became a dungeon master just a few years after I first started, like the blossoming and infinite possibilities and, you know, fragments upon fragments of story threads that anybody could pull on at any time. It's just so full of mystery and discovery. Like, those are the things that really resonated so powerfully with me that you really can never get. Even with masterpiece games like Skyrim. Skyrim is a masterpiece because there are so many threads that it seems infinite. But eventually, you know, it's still just as much as what the developers can put in.
Right.
You know, yeah. You or I or anyone else playing D&D, like, that infinite possibility is not limited by dev cycles and budgets at a software development company. It's just the imaginations around the table, which who knows where that goes. And that again, the mystery and discovery element of that is fresh every time and has been ever since I started. And that's what keeps me coming back for more.
You mentioned Skyrim. I first jumped to Fallout 3 actually is, one of those games that did have a lot of choice. It took you a lot of directions. Yeah. You could, you know, play the whole morality system, blah, blah. But you're right. It doesn't compare to sitting at the table and really, you know, making a unique choice that's really unique every time.
Yes.
I was just going to add that I do like the way that Minecraft just does, you know, it regenerates the terrain as you go, but it's not, I mean, it's different from a role-playing game as well, right? You're not actually role-playing necessarily. You're just more like, you know, we know how Minecraft
works. Yeah. But no, I understand and I appreciate what you're talking about, right? So like No Man's Sky, the procedural quality of how the universe gets created and the planets and the ecosystems and the dynamics of that is really, really fun. Now that No Man's Sky is quote unquote done, it's been out a couple of years and they finally finished it, I feel. I've had a lot of really fun with that. Again, space and exploration and stuff is another aspect of things I'm interested in. You know, besides fantasy or whatever, we'll get to that later probably, but No Man's Sky is another element of that that is fun. It's interesting. I know a little bit about Minecraft, but I really haven't played much, and to be honest, I'm somewhat ignorant of it, so it's interesting to hear that that's a quality of it. I think I'm intrigued.
Yeah, it's something that caught my attention just because what you're saying with these other games, we know that there's a finite border. Borderlands, another video game system or series that I really like, feels open. Yes. Like that, but then you run into, you know, the lasers and you can't go past here, you're going to get obliterated. And so we know that those borders exist, whereas with these RPGs, they just don't.
Bingo.
So you talked a little bit about the fantasy thing, and that's a nice segue into the types of systems maybe that you play now. Like, what's one of the things I'm curious about is, what is your other go-to besides Dungeons and Dragons? Do you have one?
I have a couple in air quotes. I mean, just adult life and my investment in the D&D experience and a variety of other things, right? With my limited time and mind share capability, work and everything. Mm-hmm. I am playing D&D 5e exclusively. However, I guess the other system, it's still a fantasy base, that would be my go-to. It's called 13th Age, uh-huh, by Palgrain Press. And it's the spiritual successor to D&D. This would have been before 5th edition came out. So this, 4th edition was kind of winding down, and there's a lot of mixed opinions about how 4th edition worked and everything, but 13th Age like nailed it. It's still, I pilfer some of the mechanics from it even today. A lot of when I do exploration in D&D and I'm, we're exploring environments, the system of movement that was introduced in 13th Age is something that I still use. But if I was to say a fallback system, it was developed by Rob Heinsoo and Jonathan Tweet, which were the lead developers of both 4th edition Dungeons & Dragons and 3.3 or 3.5. And so it kind of takes the best elements of both. And like I said, that's why I call it the spiritual successor to D&D, or I called it that rather, again, before 5th edition came out. I know you're probably asking about something a little bit more genre different, specific, and that probably would be, the main one would be Shadowrun. But there's an alternate rule set. It's called Shadowrun Anarchy, which has a lot of the same qualities as 13th Age does, but it's in that cool tech plus magic plus dystopian future like kind of environment. So like that kind of thing. Aaron, you mentioned Fallout 3 earlier. I love that game. The Fallout series in general is awesome. Shortly after I got involved in D&D and everything and started to get into PC gaming, the Fallout series in general had that huge breadth of options. It runs out eventually, but you still have the ability to explore and do so many different things in the Fallout series. And plus the, post-nuclear environment and stuff was really kind of fun. Shadowrun is very similar in that way. Shadowrun on SNES as well, for example. But anyway, Shadowrun Anarchy is a rules light rule set. I kind of goofed around with 4th edition and 5th a little bit, but it's just way too chunky for me. Some people love that crunch. I am not one of those people. I don't want to take 30 minutes to resolve one punch, because there's so many rules and dodges and back and forth and D6 pools and all these things, which is cool. But Shadowrun. And then, I haven't played it recently, but I still have all my old books from 2nd edition MechWarrior and Battletech. Battletech, again, is a little bit tactical for my liking. It's a means to an end to play MechWarrior, though, which is more about, that's more space driven and in the cosmos and flying around and doing drops on, with your battle mechs and everything. Those would probably be the two, three other systems that I enjoy.
Gotcha. Yeah, I remember Battletech back in the day.
I think it's having a little bit of a, Battletech's having a little bit of a comeback these days. I think they released some new editions that have become kind of popular. But I was going to mention Shadowrun 5th edition. That's one of the books I got that I studied and never played. And honestly, studying it was enough. Because like you said, it takes 30 minutes to calculate a punch. I remember looking at the rules for when there's an explosion in a small space. It would literally break down the ricochet and the concussion of how, you had to do the math on how big the space was and how large the radius was in the explosion and add up all the dice. And they added an example that was going to make you think, oh yeah, it's so easy. They're like, oh yeah, imagine a rat, in the bottom of this thing and somebody throws a grenade down there. And then it proceeds to do all this math and add up this ridiculous amount of damage. And I'm just like, I don't have time for that. And not to mention the whole three dimensions that you play a game. You have the astral plane, the tech plane, and the normal material plane. You're supposed to run simultaneously.
Yep.
So yeah.
Three X the complexity, which by the way, mm-hmm, is brilliantly implemented on PC. The system. Yeah. There's Shadowrun Hong Kong. There's Shadowrun Hong Kong, and I forget the third one.
I think I got those on a Steam sale, and how it goes. Yeah. I haven't played them yet.
All right. Well, they're amazing. Highly recommend. and they do all the number crunching for you. And the math and the simulation components and the mechanics of the system is really brilliant, really cool. It just is too much. And I don't have, like you, I don't have time. And, you know, if I got to study things, I usually, like I said, I have other priorities. Yeah. That's just for me, for my style of gaming. And other people love that. And they're able and willing to dive into it, and more power to them. I'm glad that there's a system for them. But for me, Shadowrun Anarchy is where it's at, because it's very lightweight by comparison. And like I said, it runs like 13th Age, and it just is really, you get the same feel. You get the same story elements, the same beats. There's a lot of, there's some common themes with the 4E and 5E like books and the dynamics of the world and all these things. Plus, you can use all of the source material. So like I have a couple of, I guess it would be Shadowrun 4E or 5E based, like Seattle 2072. And
sure.
Yeah, it Shadowrun Anarchy works perfectly fine with all of that.
I'm a little more. Let's get to know, because I do like that world, but go ahead,
Dad. No, I'm just going to say I'm a cyberpunk purist, so Shadowrun is like, oh, I don't know. but you know, this brings me to a side thought that I had earlier today. Maybe we can talk about it a little bit if it's interesting, but why do you think fantasy's been the hot genre really for 70 years or more? I'm starting to get the sense that superheroes are fast ascending in terms of what people are enjoying, both in terms of popular media and in terms of RPGs. And I could be wrong about that, but it made me wonder, why is fantasy like such a go-to for so many people, and are superhero games ascending? Is my perspective or perception of that accurate? And I don't know if either of you have anything to say about that.
Yeah, I'll say a couple of things. I think fantasy has been so prevalent because it's had that mystery to it. But the thing is that there's been J.R.R. Tolkien, really, I think is kind of one of the primary purveyors. And, you know, in America, again, it's very, you know, white dominant society, and has been for a long time. And so the proliferation of an author like that was something that just was able to happen. So people had access to Lord of the Rings. And that level of depth and detail and thinking, which of course has its Anglo, you know, historical like background, right? It comes from, you know, he draws upon similar mythos, like, you know, from Nordic cultures.
Yeah.
And, you know, because, you know, he was trying to basically build what Britain, you know, what their society would have been like if they actually had a proper like mythological backdrop, which again is compelling to all of the people that settled in the United States from that world, you know. And so, you know, they identify with that. They've had history and roots in Europe and all of these other things. So there's the connectivity there, but there's also that framework of thought and, you know, literature that people then could build on. And then people started to kind of create their own versions of all of this stuff. I'm not saying that it didn't also happen in parallel. It did, but you know, I think that Lord of the Rings was one of the most contemporary things that allowed the explosion of fantasy to become what it is today. It's like one of the main levers that really pushed it into the forefront to build up, you know, snowball style, like what it is.
And it does backtrack, you know, deep from there to what Tolkien would have used. I know for a fact, well, I don't know for a fact, but I highly suspect that he used Snorri Sturluson's Eddas for the names of the dwarves, because they're in the Eddas that Sturluson wrote, as you said, about the Nordic culture, things like that. And the Green Knight, he translated the Green Knight, and, you know, we have Beowulf and all those sorts of things, which are ancient texts or at least very old texts that informed again that same tradition. But go ahead.
Yeah. Now, superheroes and superheroism is kind of, it's an extension of that, but more. What you're looking historically, you're looking backwards. You're looking at a period of time that is rooted in history. With superheroes, that is something that is now explorable with a lot more context to technology, today's issues, and also can be forward-looking. And so that's why I think that is starting to take prominence. And, you know, just the magic of it and the ability to, you know, rather than be a ninth level spellcaster and do all this crazy stuff, you have superpowers. But effectively, it's the same thing. I mean, ninth level wish, or you can just, you know, mentally kill somebody, you know, whatever, with your mind, like Professor X or whatever superhero powers you want to make. you know, I've been involved in, and I have interests in a lot of that stuff too. I like many of the Marvel films, and geez, back in 2004, actually. And it's still around today. There's this game called City of Heroes. It's an MMO that is based in, you create superheroes of all different types and varieties. They have all these different power sets, and the dynamics of the game is just really fantastic. Like the three-dimensional ability, like, you know, flying and teleporting and, you know, doing all of these things that you see in, you know, classic comics. Like, you can do all that stuff. And it also has some really rich story and stuff like that. It's called, if anybody looks it up, you can look up City of Heroes Homecoming, because it was run by NCSoft and they shut it. The game, when they got purchased, it used to be owned by, it was Paragon Studios, and then it got purchased by NCSoft, which is a Korean company. I think that also owned or ran like the Lineage series. And well, this superhero thing wasn't anything they were interested in. They bought Paragon Studios for some other properties, but so they shut City of Heroes down. After about 4 or 5 years, though, some enthusiasts kind of, they got access to the source. I'm not sure exactly the dynamics of how it works, but they were able to get the rights and the source code for City of Heroes. And so they relaunched servers that still are running today with all the original content. They've developed against it since then, purely on donation base. And it's super stable, has a really rich and active community. And like it's a superhero wet dream. I mean, you can do anything that you can imagine from comic books. It's very well done. The net code is fantastic. You know, so people are getting a chance to explore that as well. And it's pulling on those same threads of, you know, mystery, the want to impact things that you wouldn't be able to otherwise in a seemingly senseless world where you can't, you know, where it's a struggle to impact anything. And it's a great way for people to express themselves and see themselves in the ability to be something more.
Nice.
I think that last note is probably the kicker of it too. Like you said, when you're kind of in the role of the superhero, when you're playing a game like City of Heroes, or there's also games like Champions Online, which I haven't played myself, but I know some people who are really into that, and also DC Universe Online, which is maybe more rooted in those kind of tales in terms of storylines, but offers a similar kind of superhero experience. Like when you're playing the fantasy thing, you are looking back and kind of exploring the mystery of, you know, what was, and, you know, the mythos of those supposed times, so to speak. When right. you're stepping into a superhero's shoes, you know, it's most often modern era, and you're, you know, yeah, like you said, you're fighting in a world usually for justice or whatever, where in a world that feels normally, you know, more of a struggle to make an impact, like you were saying.
Yeah.
I was just going to say, I've been playing in every other Wednesday in a, on a stream of this RPG Icons on Garen Jahan's Fresh Out the Box, which is a thing that they do. And anyway, shout out to them. But anyway, yeah. It's actually my first superhero RPG that I've ever really played. And honestly, I didn't have a deep interest in superhero stuff in general. I mean, I did play DC Universe Online for a bit, mostly for the game aspects. But it's when you're playing it as an RPG, it does feel different. Like you feel kind of that sense of personal power and responsibility with that power that you might hear quoted in like Spider-Man, right?
Right.
And so it just has a different feel, and I'm going to say it feels good. When I say that, I mean like it doesn't feel dissatisfying to play like most RPGs do when you're in a good session, but it feels like you're doing good. In the sense of you are in a hero's shoes explicitly, if that makes sense.
Yeah, and you're having an impact. And
yes.
I know I can be overly verbose sometimes, so I apologize, but Ty, to kind of get to one part of your question, mm-hmm. it's contemporary. People mm-hmm. have relevance to it because of everything that they see in social media and with the internet and everything, you know, and their normal day-to-day life. See, you know, when you're looking at the 70s, you know, because, you know, Lord of the Rings came out around in late 50s, 60s. And then you have later 60s, 70s, 80s, 90s, you know, into 2000s, right? There really wasn't there wasn't a lot of good view into the contemporary world, nowhere near how it is today. Right. So people used stories and histories and things like that as their primary escapes. You know, they're not exclusively, of course. I mean, people always are looking forward, but the accessibility to it is what I'm referencing. Accessibility to contemporary things is, well, in the stratosphere by comparison. And I think that is why looking at the world through that lens of superheroism is on the rise, you know.
No, that's a great point. And it brings another point too that I find really satisfying about the current era of popular media that I longed for as a child of the 80s in my movie and hero entertainment was that consistency of the storyline. I've talked about this before, but the 80s Batman movies, and to some degree still, that's another tangent, but there was a lack of cohesion from one film to the next. They just didn't pay any attention to what happened before, what was going to happen in the future. And the Marvel series and the X-Men, who did it before them, bring that element, which is so satisfying, that continuous storyline that reflects and overlaps with the previous storylines. And that builds in people a desire to keep the story going, I think.
Yes. That's a big aspect of also what draws me to tabletop RPGs that doesn't exist in any other medium, is exactly that. It doesn't exclusively happen very much just because, you know, people have lives and you don't have parties together all the time. But I mean, I ran a campaign. The longest campaign I ran was 6 years long in real life. Mm-hmm. And that continuity, the history of what happened. I mean, we had a get together just like 2 months ago, I think, all of the players that played in that game. And we were just, you know, we were talking about the history of what happened throughout all of those adventures. And reflecting on those experiences and, you know, figuring out something that you discovered 2 years ago in a session today, like that there's a profoundness to that connection that you can't ever get in any like one shot or even in video games to some extent. There is some like, hey, you know, the Fallout series, just to go back to that, like there are references in Fallout 4 to things that happened in Fallout 3, and Fallout 3 that has references to things that happened in Fallout 2 and 1. They're not explicit. They're not a part of the story, which, you know, I don't like it when that happens either, but I like it as like just a little nugget of like, oh, because you were there, you saw that, or you played that character at that time. Similar things like something that I draw some inspiration from and that I look to when I write stories is the writing method in Star Trek, like Next Generation, Deep Space Nine, stuff like that. And they don't ever rely on what happened before to tell their story today. They make reference to it to help the audience understand what happened as they're exploring the story and coming to conclusions and solving riddles and doing what they're doing. So it's not reliant on that previous, it's not reliant on that continuity, but it's there. And that gives you as the viewer or the consumer of the entertainment, that connection with it that makes it so fun.
So
I understand what you're talking about.
Yeah. Well, it's funny. It was a paradigm shift, and it's only 12, maybe 15 years old. That whole thing sort of went in motion. I don't know. I remember how old the oldest X-Men movies are now, but anyway, yeah, it's an interesting idea or an interesting thing to observe, I think. And I'm really grateful for it. And now we're going off the other end of the scale with our entertainment. There's so much coming. You know, I'm just the Willow movie, Willow 2, and the Game of Thrones prequel, and the Lord of the Rings anime, and the Ring of Power series, and on, and all these things, you know, the Vox Machina, and all these things are just like, just going through the roof for fans.
Yep.
We're never going to need to leave home.
Although, I mean, to be honest, I'm skeptical. And there are many of those properties that have that continuity, so to say, that, to be honest, I don't think are good. They rely too much on what happened before rather than having their own independent story that is solvent and good and invests you. It relies too much on the nostalgia on what happened before in order to like continue that narrative rather than having it as just a foundation. And then you use that foundation to launch into an equally good story with its own relevance, with its own tale to tell, so to speak.
Yeah, this is my trepidation with like the D&D movie that's coming up. We, you know, we've had D&D movies before and they're so campy and just making fun yes. of the genre. A friend of ours, Mike, we had a discussion, and I don't know if he credits me or I credit him or we credit each other for suggesting that a movie based on White Plume Mountain would be phenomenal, could be phenomenal, because it's an original D&D story from the genre, from the IP that people know from the old school days, and we would love it. Instead of just trying to make up, like, you know, some sort of a bunch of goofballs get together and somehow become heroes kind of story.
But the best, like, quote unquote D&D movie that, in my personal opinion, the title's pretty goofy, but it's called The Gamers: Darkness Rising.
I don't know if I've actually watched it all the way through. Yeah. I don't know if I've seen it, but I have seen it. I don't think I've watched it.
It's really good. Classic D&D story, but it has, and it's goofy, and it explores all of the campy, funny, like, jokes and memes that exist for D&D and D&D culture, but, you know, in a self-aware way that's respectful. And there's a growth of character, both in the fantasy characters in the world and the players themselves. And so it's very fantastically done as a D&D film. It's like, I call it the best B movie that there is, just because it was so remarkably entertaining. And, you know, it's an independent film, so it's low budget and all these things. And so it has all the stuff that comes with that. But still, it was very well written and very fun. And that's like the best D&D movie in this guy's opinion.
More than Knights of Badassdom?
It's up there.
That's also a good one. I was going to say I watched both of those, but the former I actually picked because I was wanting to watch some campy B movie. You know, I was like, I was in one of those moods where I was like, oh, this will probably be, you know, not that great, but I'm into it. And I put it on. I was like, wow, this is actually wonderful. I was very surprised. And actually, I watched that movie before I was even really playing TTRPGs. And after, I was inspired to play.
This is Darkness Rising?
Darkness Rising, yeah.
Okay, all right. Now I have to watch it. All right, I'll do that.
Yeah, it has all the classic tropes, like the cat jumping on the table and everything. They nailed it.
I'd like to change gears a little bit here and give some attention to the D&D experience proper. Why don't you tell us a little bit about that and what you got going on there?
Yeah, sure. So, short form, it's a premium D&D hosting service. It's hosted on the Airbnb Experiences platform. And for anybody who isn't really familiar with Airbnb Experiences, if you don't know what that is, I mean, most people know what Airbnb is. You know, someone's renting out a room or a house or something to people for like accommodations. Well, experiences is just people renting out their time and their skills for people for, you know, entertainment or adventure or of some kind. Little bit of a tangent, but it's an amazing thing that Airbnb Experiences is awesome to check out in general, because just there's so many authentic people and activities to experience, like in your local area, like wherever you are, wherever you live, there's a ton of things to do. Like, it's great. It's a fantastic idea for things like date nights or anniversaries or just, you know, any, you know, if you have family visiting and you're just looking for something to do. You know, it's amazing. The D&D experience just happens to be one of those things to do.
So just to clarify, this is, you don't do lodging. This is about events or activities.
Correct.
Oh, okay.
Correct. So yeah, I don't host a room or my house or anything for accommodations. I'm on Airbnb Experiences, where I host my time and my expertise and everything that comes with the D&D experience to host that adventure, to host that experience for people. It's a 7 to 8 hour D&D game, full with three acts, where I am your dungeon master. You know, one of the focuses that I have is on really teaching new people how to play, because, you know, people that are surfing Airbnb Experiences looking for something to do, right? They're looking for something new or that they haven't done before. Or classically, what I usually get is one person who's played and wants to involve their friends or, you know, share that love that they have for TTRPGs. Like, what's this D&D thing all about, with somebody else? And this is a premium way where I provide the environment to do that. I work with people over that 7 to 8 hours to learn the rules, a bit very basic, like bare bones minimum, what you need to know version of that in a way that they can understand. You know, provide a lot of references to contemporary literature and film and other things that people, so that they can get it. Create some simple characters, level one, usually for obvious reasons. And, you know, I basically have, at this point, I have five distinct modules that I've written in my own game world that people explore based on the group's decisions. So there's a dynamic to it, and there's a feeling of that adventure and that anything's possible. It hosts in what I call the Vault of the Six. So it's a specially built set, like that's, you know, here on my property. That's truly creates a truly immersive experience. Like there's a lot of hardwood, like environment surroundings to, you know, give it that kind of like tavern inn look and feel. You know, apart from my history in acting and voice acting, you know, I'm not going to claim to be as like rich and, you know, I have, that's not my profession. Right. So I don't do that. I wouldn't say I'm as skilled or as good as say Matt Mercer or somebody, but my skills are not zero. And, you know, so I provide an immersive experience, had lights, surround sound, music, soundboards. You know, I've been very fortunate in that I've been at the right times in my life and in the right situation to participate in the Dwarven Forge Kickstarters when they've come around, to have like a variety of miniatures and set pieces that can really help provide that training wheels for the imagination that most people need. You know, because when you're brand new and you're getting into tabletop RPGs, or you're getting into like D&D and trying to understand what it is, you know, yeah, you can do that with a wet erase mat, no problem. But that requires a strong imagination. And imagination is very much like a muscle. You know, as we get older, unless you exercise it by reading a lot or playing D&D or something often, it atrophies, right? So a lot of people's friends, or they're trying to get involved in this, they need a hand. So their imagination muscle doesn't have to lift as much because I have all of this set piece in this environment and, you know, displays on big screen and all of these and lights and all these components. Yeah. And then it also is fully catered. So there's a huge variety of snackage, like a meal menu that's included in that, along with drinks, both non-alcoholic and alcoholic, just beer and wine, though I can't really do hard liquor licensing and stuff. And all of that is included in the ticket price. And so you walk away with a truly unique experience.
And this is this all over one day? Like, is it the full day experience?
That's right.
Okay.
Yep. 7 to 8 hours. And all you got to bring is yourself. Mm-hmm. You don't need any equipment. You don't need any dice. You don't need nothing. I've got it all set up and prepared the entire thing for the clients.
How long have you been doing this for?
Let's see. I was doing it for about, I want to say just shy of 2 years prior to the pandemic. So that means, it's hard to say whether you call that 3 years or 5 years. I mean, cause obviously we didn't do anything, for two of those years. But yeah, so I've been doing it quite a while. I've had hundreds of tables, people traveling from all over the country, all over the world. You know, like I said, there's usually somebody with two or three friends and then a couple that's looking for something to do, and they'll meet each other, and people have formed lasting friendships from meeting each other and experiencing this stuff together. It's been really a blessing to see and to experience as I've kept touch with some of them.
So is this a situation where you get a lot of like somebody who knows a little bit or a lot of it about D&D or RPGs, and then they want to bring some folks along because they're all in the area together? Or is it more experienced players typically? Do you have a sense of that?
Yeah, it's the former. It's mostly the person who has done it before and wants to bring their friends in. I've done plenty of deliveries where it's all people who are very experienced, and they just, one of them always has to DM or something, and they don't want to do it. They all want to get to play. Mm-hmm. And they get to do so with, like, you know, 5-star bang. I only say that not because I'm being egotistical, but I just, you know, that's what people tell me, right? That's what's on my ratings. I have 4.98 after all those deliveries. And that's because one person told me this was the awesomest thing ever. 4 stars.
Yeah.
You know, and by the way, you can read people's reviews, which tell you what they think about the experience, not what I think, because obviously I'm biased. But so there's that. So primarily it's new people getting their friends involved. Secondarily, it's groups that are experienced and are just looking to get away from the DM responsibilities and want some bang. And then the other one that, and this was, I wasn't actually expecting this, but it was really great. Tabletop RPGs, like Dungeons and Dragons or other similar things in particular, have, apart from all of the other great things that have brought me joy I've talked about, they have practical benefits in life, whether that's in navigating social situations or understanding how to listen and talk and interact with people. But there's also a practical professional application to it, you know, because like my day job is, you know, I'm an operations manager at Microsoft, and, you know, I usually have to get like, you know, a finance person and an engineer and a technician. And I mean, a fighter and a cleric, right? Like, you know, together to understand each other's capabilities and leverage them all to in partnership to slay the dragon. I mean, build the facility or what, or the software or whatever it is that the project's about. So project management, team cohesion, you know, learning how to understand what other people's skills are and leverage each other in a team benefit way. Like that's, you know, morale building and team building exercises for companies of varying types. I've done a whole bunch of deliveries for like that, you know, morale event sort of thing. And I've gotten like cards back. And so it's had some pretty good impact on helping team cohesion and companies work better.
Problem solving is also a big key to that.
Yes. Yeah. Problem solving, puzzle. Exactly.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, I can verify visually. What am I trying to say? Virtually the dynamic spread, because we had that game together not too long ago. Oops, All Wizards, and we were checking out the setup, and it was awesome to have the terrain to look at even on the screen. So I can only imagine there being a person with the lighting around you and the surround sound and all that kind of stuff. Like, I'm ready to sign up here.
Same.
I would love to see you whenever you're in the Seattle area. I guess that's the one major. It's not a drawback necessarily, but it's just a limiter. And that is that it's a physical activity that's geolocated. So, but to be honest, that hasn't stopped people. There's a couple in particular that I've hosted 4 times.
Wow.
That came from Colorado. Like they live in Boulder, Colorado. Tara and Todd, if you're listening, hello. I think they found me on browsing Airbnb experiences when they were up, like just staying in, she's a librarian, so she was here for some librarian conference, and they're just looking to get away from it. And then after that, they came back specifically for this on a number of occasions, which has been very, very humbling and makes me feel good. I'm glad.
Being in the Seattle area, you're in the Wizards' backyard.
Yes,
you are in PAX West, right? Backyard.
Yep. So there's a number of sessions off the back of or surrounding those events. Emerald City Comic Con is another mm-hmm. big one where I've seen people like, hey, let's find something to do when there's not con stuff going on we care about. And they find themselves here, which again, I'm very grateful for.
Well, that's where you're likely to see us, because we will be doing those things professionally ourselves. So we will make it happen when we get get up in that area.
Yeah, let me know. I'm excited.
Yeah. It sounds really cool. I don't even know what to say about the industry for gaming. You know, I teach critical thinking. I teach English, and one of the classes I teach is critical thinking. And I love to use the subject of the TTRPG industry to ask my students the simple question: what do you think you know, what is the economic impact of the TTRP industry? And they have no idea, none. They think that it's really nice that somebody's out there hosting tables for their little friends and doing this. They don't realize the production companies, the HR, the artists and writers and editors and right. hosts of all these things. It's a huge industry and growing.
All the event planners that do the cons and run con circuits, right? You know, that there are gaming companies that's specifically what they do.
Yeah. And it just to, again, to get onto a little bit of a tangent, but having grown up in the industrial era, industrial focused education system and for the last 20 years or more, at least, people starting to say, you know, we need to change this. The industrial model doesn't work. We don't need memorization. We need soft skills. We need people to, you know, what does the future look like? It looks like this. It looks like doing these cool things for a living, because technology can do a lot of the things that we used to have to get an education in. Now, obviously not at higher levels of engineering and things like that, but it's this blending of things that we can do. Larry Elmore, not too long ago, the famous TSR artist,
yes,
said on a, as part of an interview, there's a million ways to make $1 million. And he said, that's more true now than ever. And that's really good news for those of us who are working on aspects of this as a means to, it's negative to say monetize, but you know, it's nice when you can make your passion, make a living at your passion. So
yeah,
more power to all of us.
I mean,
absolutely. You know,
yeah. If I theoretically was able to book 5 sessions a week on a regular basis, like I could quit working at Microsoft.
Right.
You know,
and that's, who knows, it's almost like not if, but when something like that, you know,
right,
takes off. So we just do what we do and we celebrate the steps along the way. So if you've got this big collection of stuff for D&D experience and these cool spreads and stuff like that, is there something in all of your stuff that is a prized possession for you? Like, do you have a most prized gaming possession?
I mean, my Dwarven Forge collection,
hard to argue.
I mean, that's hardly a single object, but it speaks to me in many ways, not just because of what it gives me in terms of the D&D experience and my personal games and things like the Oops All Wizards One Shot and everything. You know, when I was a young kid, I used to love playing with Legos, and basically it's Dungeons and Dragons themed Legos. And so there's a little bit of just the kid in me that is always it's one of my most favorite things to do. Whenever I write a story or I come up with a new, you know, module or whatever you want to call it, I start with the dungeon first, and I just play around with rooms and halls and traps and daises and, you know, whatever, like all the Bug Blair stuff. I have like a bunch of stuff, 'cause I've been so fortunate.
That's so cool, because the dungeon crawl is something that a lot of contemporary new gamers, dare I say, maybe don't understand quite the value or the excitement that some of us older gamers do.
Yeah. Yeah. The mystery in it. But if you're going to stick me to a singular possession, singular object, I still have my original AD&D second edition player's handbook. I reference it all the time. It's got like some really great tables for, like, you know, ages and heights and weights and stuff of elves and dwarves and whatnot. But I mean, that's what really started all of this for me. And decades of joy off that book. So that is my most prized possession. That's so, like, you know, your album of baby pictures or something like that. Yeah. Right. You know, it's
nice.
Yeah, you could get rid of it, but I mean, you know, that's your history. That's your memories. That's, you know, all the things that brings to you. That's my icon.
No, I totally understand that. I reacquired the first edition stuff, which is where I started, just to have it.
Yeah.
You know, did you go second edition, third edition, 3.5, 4, 5th like that? Or did you skip any of them?
To be honest, I skipped 3 and 3.5. Played a ton of second edition. And then I started working 2 jobs, and, you know, this was early adulthood, and I started a family and, you know, get a condo and responsibilities and life, and, you know, got more into PC gaming, like kind of, you know, Fallout and all that other stuff. Like, I was, because it was so tied with the industry that I was in, right? PC gaming, a lot of my energy and time and money and stuff was invested in that area, right? Learning about what my career became is now, of course. But that happened, that was just through the 3 and 3.5 era. When 4th came around, my daughter, who was in middle school at the time, this is kind of a funny story, her choir teacher, they had like some kind of a choir tournament or something down in Berkeley. So a bunch of the kids flew down there. You know, we sent our daughter with the choir. And my daughter, my wife went to chaperone. And on the way back, she decided to upgrade first class, and then who'd she sit next to? the choir teacher. His name is Jeff Steen. And he was in first class too. And they started talking, and they have a similar interest in native plants and gardening. But then it was like, oh, I played Dungeons and Dragons. And my wife was like, oh, my husband does, or did anyway. And you should get together. He ended up coming over, running a fourth edition game for me. And I was like, why did I even stop this? Why? What? And it snowballed. It went nuts. Like I went crazy. Not only did I get back into it hardcore, but then, you know, things like Darkness Rising was out at around that time. And we were like, man, wouldn't it be neat if we had a game store that had this kind of feel and had this kind of stuff and did it, you know, cause there was always, I've always had my criticisms of like that, you know, the dingy, stinky, you know, white wash, fluorescent light game store, like image that, you know, a lot of people I think have in their minds. It's a lot different now, mm-hmm. but, we opened up a game store so that we could host and do basic, you know, D&D and proliferate, you know, TTRPGs and celebrate that community. Absolutely. And so we did that for like 2 or 3 years, and it was really a lot of fun. So yeah, it went to the nth degree. Now, for a variety of reasons, we decided not to continue with that project. You know, which is, I don't think we'll have time to go into here. But I still wanted to capture that environment and find a way to bring that community presence, you know, to D&D, to my love of all of this. And that's what ended up becoming the D&D experience. That's where I was able to find and put all that stuff together. Although one thing, and then I'll stop, about that game store project, that this was like my ultimate trophy in DM and event coordination, was in fourth edition, there was Living Forgotten Realms. It was just the name of a series of published modules that all had interrelationship and interconnection with each other. So you're talking about that concept of continuity. I think it's called Adventure League now, that Wizards releases some similar content.
Okay.
But they had specialized modules that were meant for multiple tables to play at the same time, primarily at conventions. Well, I was able to get a hold of some of that content, and we actually hosted, it was called LFR-a-thon, you know, Living Forgotten Realms-a-thon. And it was all day, and you know, these are all 4-hour modules, and so we put, you know, 16 hours. So there were 3 of these modules, you know, groups of 6 tables, and then at the end was this big, massive one where they fought this big demigod, I forget its name, and they all had to work together, 6 adventuring companies, in order to play together. You know, they won, and it was very exciting. And anyway, I'll stop now.
I've heard of that kind of table experience. And when I was first getting into D&D, that was one of the things that I really hoped to be a part of. And I think you're right. I think it is called Adventure League now. But I've heard of it getting up to like 6 simultaneous tables at a time in terms of like in-person play.
Yeah. And it's magical. That kind of experience was just incredible. The 6-year-long campaign, that was like a really amazing feather in the cap to explore. That story was all about like extraplanar. I'll go into it another time. But and then, yeah, having the 6 tables all working together and, you know, calling out and yelling, and because, you know, I was the DM/coordinator, not for each table, but for the overall event. So I'm like hollering out, and it just was a really fun time. Everyone had a great time. And anyway, so back to the point, I skipped 3 and 3.5, jumped into 4th, went crazy, and have continued on ever since.
I love that story. Listeners know I have a similar story. I skipped 4th also, but yeah, it's a great, I don't know, phenomenon of the pastime or the hobby that it lasted. And again, this is probably more stuff that we could discuss for another hour, but it lasted long enough to come back around the way that it has.
Yes.
And for those of us who are earlier generations to be able to enjoy it just as much as when we started. Whoops. So, well, we are almost out of time. Can you tell us where folks can find you?
So at the moment, you can just troll Airbnb experiences in the Seattle area. And, you know, there's lots of things to look for. I will be in one of those things. But to find me just a little bit quicker and easier, there's a couple of ways. The first one would just be to look on YouTube for D&D experience with an ampersand. So D ampersand D experience King 5. because if you just look for D&D and experience, you're going to get a bunch of, you know, like here, how to work experience and how does that, you know, DM class videos and stuff. But I was actually featured on King 5 is a local news station here, and I was actually featured on their evening show, which highlights things to do. And so there's this really amazing segment that kind of summarizes what I mentioned on this podcast, but you get to see the visuals, you can actually see the set and everything, and then the links are all there in order to get access to the direct event on the Airbnb Experiences page. You can look for, and this is kind of a funny play on words, because it's on Airbnb Experiences, you can look for AirD&D Experience. So like rather than just the D&D Experience, it's AirD&D Experience, but in any search engine. And I think it's called the AirD&D Experience Complete, and that I'll be like one of the first links there, and you can just direct access that. I'm on Twitter at the moment as @DNDExperience, and then I have a website, dndexp.com. If you go there now, you're not going to see anything. I'm relaunching that at the same time as I'm actually posting open dates again. So this is just an interesting timing to be talking about this, because you can hit contact host and I will love to work with you and coordinate with you on times. If you have an event or you're going to be in town in a certain week, like, you know, you're going to be in town for, you know, PAX or various events, love to work with you on coordinating an event. That's how I've been doing my most recent deliveries. But we're not at the point yet where we want to be fully open like that. We're still kind of teasing it out, but we're looking about mid to late fall. So when that happens, I'll be relaunching my website with all the updated stuff and everything at that time. So keep tabs though, dndexp.com. And of course, you know, if you follow me on Twitter at @DNDExperience, again, that's, you know, Delta November Delta, you know, you'll get the announcements and see everything that's going on and so forth.
So maybe right now the best place to keep up with you is on Twitter.
Probably
want to follow there perhaps and get updates there.
Yes, sir.
Awesome. Dennis, thanks a lot for joining us today. It's been great talking to you and hearing about this experience. It's always like hearing from folks that have an experience like what you had. It's so it's part of the family. That's such an overused term, but it really does feel like that kind of communal family ship of players that do this. Oh, yeah. And did you have some thoughts?
No specific thoughts really, but yeah, you're absolutely right. Because there's a lot to this experience of sitting around and playing tabletop role-playing games, and the D&D experience that you offer, you know, like you said, it's really demonstrative of like what this community is about.
Yeah.
Thank you. And I'm delighted. I'm delighted to have the chance to share all of this with you and, you know, everyone who's listening, of course. It's a unique and amazing community, and that, I don't know what else to say. It's changed my life, and I'm looking to do the same for others and bring that joy to other people. Because ultimately, although the experience is great and everything for me personally, the end game here really, and why I focus on new players, is exactly to that, is to bring new people into this community. So that way it's that much richer, that much more diverse for all of us to have an incredible time together.
You're here. All right. Well, thank you. We'll be talking to you again.
My pleasure. Keep in touch.
Yes, thank you.